Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is Colin from Can I Justify. You're rocking Attitude Era Live with Icon, Granny Hofster, and Big Swin.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you are hearing that sound, you know what time it is. It is Monday night. It is Attitude Era Live time, live on 89.1 Ken's FM, and we got a blockbuster show. We're going to get right to it. First off, we have Granny Hulkster on the line. How are you?
I'm doing well, Icon. Ready for another awesome show here on 89.1 Ken's FM.
And ladies and gentlemen, I also give you the late Eric Mathias. How are you, sir?
Well, now you gave away my shoot name. Thank you, buddy. Yes, the modern Nightmare Mathias just about missed his call time to the studio. I got here a couple minutes ago just in time. Chipotle was making me wait for my delicious burrito, so now I was almost late, but here I am, and I am on time, ready to do another good show on 89.1 Ken's FM.
And one thing about Mathias, though, you can never, ever call him, you'll never, ever see him late to the ring,
never.
Or you'll never see him late to dinner. But anyway.
Nope, you're not wrong there.
So we have a big show tonight, so we're gonna go ahead and introduce everybody. We got Diana Franklin. Of course, she starred in the movie The Last American Virgin and Better Off Dead. She was also in How I Got to College, and she was also in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. We're going to talk to her. We have Ray Scott, who used to play for the Detroit Pistons, the Baltimore Bullets, and he was a coach of the Detroit Pistons. He's got a new story out. He's going to tell us. And returning back to us, we have Carla Albrecht. And she's got a new CD out, and we're going to talk to her about some of the great songs on here, some that we can't really mention that we have to edit. But I can't wait to talk to her about that. She'll be making her third appearance on our show. She loves us. She loves Granny. I don't think she's met Mathias yet, but I'm sure she'll love you, too, because she's a good guy on the show because she saw your picture. But anyway. And we also... There's also a rumor that we might have the swinger himself, the big swing on, but I don't know. We'll see. The Yankees played this afternoon, so and they beat our favorite team, the Minnesota Twins. So he might be on. He might not. We'll see. But the lines are always open for him. And anyway, how's everybody doing, Granny? What's new with you? How are you doing this week?
I'm doing good. It's been a crazy week, you know. Wrestling coming up September 24th for WFC again. And, of course, the godmother of wrestling is always ready for a good wrestling event. My husband and my son and I and a good friend of ours, my son bought the tickets. We actually went to our local movie theater and watched the AEW pay-per-view All Out last night at the movie theater. It was pretty awesome. Lots of great matches.
Touchdown, Raiders!
Wait, you did not need to do that. I know it's getting close to football season, but you know how I feel about those nasty, ugly Raiders.
Right.
I hate the Raiders.
And, towards the middle of the show there, we'll talk about the AEW pay-per-view. And how about Mathias? What's new with you? I know that you got a couple of events coming up. And I will say, did you see that Attitude Era Live and 89.1 Ken's FM has endorsed you in your upcoming match this coming Saturday, I believe it is, right?
Actually, that'll be the 17th, the one that you guys posted about. That is when I take on the Mean Marine Mason Mayhem at This One's for the Vets presented by BZW. My next up-and-coming shows, as you mentioned, I will be in Fergus Falls for Below Zero Wrestling, Rumble in the River 2. In Fergus Falls, September 10th, and then the 15th and 16th, I will be going out to a new promotion, Strike Force Pro Wrestling out of Minot, North Dakota, for the 15th and 16th, And then after that, I will be again in BZW in Moorhead, Minnesota, for this one's for the vets. We'll have Eric Bischoff there at that show, and we'll have Ken Anderson at the 10th show, so that'll be fun. And then I actually just got another booking out in Butte, Montana, October 1st, that I was just in cahoots with the promoter. So we're talking about going up there. And then we kind of started finalizing.
Oh, my God. Who the hell cares?
I was waiting for it. The one time he doesn't get to talk about himself, he decides to annoy everybody else. But anyway, December 17th will be my big show coming up. I defend my APW World Heavyweight Championship against who I do not know, but we'll come to find out there later on in the future. But, yeah, one big thing was I actually got myself a little present. Just yesterday I picked up the Xbox One Series X. I decided it was time to upgrade. So now I have a brand new Xbox.
Where'd you get that at?
At Target, as a matter of fact.
Really? They have them at Target now?
Yeah. Well, currently Best Buy and Walmart have the Xbox Series S, the digital-only versions, for $300. And then if you want to go to BestBuy.com, you could purchase an Xbox One Series X 1 terabyte system, but you'd have to wait a week for them to get to the store. Then you could purchase one. Well, I decided, well, you know, I'll go on Target.com and just randomly see if they had one. Well, they said they had them in stock, but if you look in the cabinet, there's none, but they have them in back. So I ended up getting me a 1 terabyte Xbox One Series X just yesterday.
Well, you know, the Icon and his wife are now the proud owners. As long as we're talking games real quick, you don't want to bore anybody, but we are now the proud owners of a PS5. And I have one in sitting on my entertainment center. We've been watching 4K movies, and I'll tell you what, man, you can play any PS4 game on this thing. I haven't tried any PS3 games or PS2 games or anything like that. I don't think you can use those, but I believe you can download them
on the PS Store. Yeah,
right. You know, and we got the one with the drive, like you, just like you said. We didn't want a downloading thing. We want to be able to
play the old discs.
Yeah, play the old discs and play movies and stuff on it, you know.
Yeah.
So,
that's awesome, though, because those PS5s are so hard to come by. You can't find them anywhere. So, I mean, you must have been waiting for months for that thing.
Well, you know, I can give a little secret here. I used to work for a local company here in Fargo that has, and I cannot name them, but they have an online presence, and they're named after a jungle, and they got a shipment of 100 of them, and
Wow. So you got your hands on one.
I did.
Well, if you know your co-host here, he's always looking to upgrade some more. So if you want to talk and get into hoots and get me one, I'll gladly pay you back for one of them.
Well, unfortunately, you know, I don't work at the jungle anymore, but I still have some friends there that might be able to.
Let's talk.
But I'll tell you what. Here's what we're going to do. We need to take a quick little commercial break, hear from one of our great sponsors, and then we'll be back with the interview I've been waiting for all my life. We'll be back here shortly after these messages from one of our sponsors. Give us a little bit, and we'll be right back. The new WoodSpring Suites of Fargo, located at 1090 35th Street North at the I-29 and 12th Avenue North interchange, is an extended stay, pet-friendly hotel with kitchenettes in every room, including a stovetop, full-size fridge, and microwave, plus a big 40-inch flat-screen TV with free Wi-Fi. You can book a room at 701-582-1600 or online at www.woodspring.com. WoodSpring Suites of Fargo, rated 4.2 by TrustScore. All right, let's get into this. Ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room and walking down the aisle. She's going to tell us how she got into college, being the last American virgin, and she's going to tell us how she was better off dead than being with Bill and Ted on their excellent adventure. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the gal of the 80s, the most beautiful woman in the history of 80s cinema. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Diane Franklin.
Hey, this is Diane Franklin, and you are listening to Attitude Error Monday Live Monday on 89.1 Ken's FM with your host, the Icon, the Big Swing, the mother of wrestling granny Hulkster, and the modern nightmare, Matthias.
All right. How are you, Diana? Good to have you.
Thank you for having me here on the show. I'm so excited. This is so much fun.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. We have Diana Franklin here, and the good news is we have 35 minutes here on 89.1 KINS FM. But here's what we're going to do here. We're going to have you give us a little background about yourself. Then I'm going to ask you some questions, and then we'll do a roundtable, and then we'll come back to me. I'll ask you the tougher questions. So go ahead. Give us a little background.
All right. My background is I've been an actress since I was actually started acting when I was 10 years old. I mean, professionally, you know, I did commercials, I did modeling, theater, soap opera, you know, I did those plays in schools, but I also, I always wanted to be an actress ever since I literally knew when I was 4 years old that that was what I wanted to do. And when I did like commercials, you know, you can now, which is really fun with the internet, you know, you can look up like Reese's peanut butter commercials and Diane Franklin and the, you know, a Trident sugarless mint. So it's really fun to see my career start so young, you know. And then when I basically when I turned 18, I got my first, well, actually 17, I did a soap opera called As the World Turns. And that was on there for like a half year. And then after that, I got my first film at 19. And that was a film called The Last American Virgin. And I did that film. I did a movie called Amityville 2, The Possession. I was in a movie called Better Off Dead, where I played a French girl. I was in a film called Terror Vision, where I play like an 80s punk rocker. I was also in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures. And I started acting, you know, at a young age, and I still act today. I'm actually in a few movies right now. I'm in a Ted Bundy movie. I'm in a Amityville Murders movie. I'm in a movie called High Holiday on Peacock. So there you go. That's my basic background. I'm all over the place.
Well, I'll tell you what, a couple things I want to ask you about, and then we'll do a roundtable. But first thing I want to talk about is we'll talk about my favorite role towards the end here when I come back and do the tougher question. But I want to first talk about Better Off Dead. You played a foreign a French exchange student. Would you be willing to do our names with that accent?
Oh, what do you mean, like Scott? I can talk,
yeah.
Totally talk like this. but who are the other person? I only know Scott. I do not know the other name. Oh, you mean all the other people that I mentioned? Like,
right.
Granny Hulkster. All right, I will say it again. The icon, Big Swing, the mother of wrestling, Granny Hulkster. And the modern nightmare, Matthias.
I love that.
There you go.
You know, you got to some of the – I'm just kind of curious. What was it like being in the one scene when you got to stand next to Booger from Revenge of the Nerds?
Oh, my gosh. So, first of all, the actor who played well, Booger was, like, from, I guess, Revenge of the Nerds. This was Charles DeMar who played the the character Charles DeMar. His name is Curtis Armstrong. He was hilarious. We had a great time working together. He is, he's just a fun, smart guy. And he made me crack up on stage. I'm on the set. I mean, I laughed so hard with him, especially when we did that scene where, you know, he's snorting the Jell-O. That was not written into the script. So he improvised that. It was hilarious. And if you watch that scene from Better Off Dead, if you're not familiar, but look for the French girl. I'm the French girl. When you see that scene, you will see me, like, my lip is, like, quivering. I'm trying not to laugh. And it is probably one of the hardest scenes I ever did in that film.
And another person you got to star with, you live with Ricky Schneet. And he, of course, played Dennis Blunden on Head of the Class. Now, of course, he didn't talk in that movie at all. But I understand that he's very talkative. He's also a very big prankster, is he not?
Here's the thing, interesting. During Better Off Dead, that was like before he did Head of the Class, I guess. So to me, I didn't know that he was a prankster. He was just hilarious. Like, he was just a funny guy. And we had so much fun. And, you know, all those characters we played were so, I just got to say, like, they were so, everyone was so new, unique. No one was playing something that they had seen before. Everyone created their own character. I mean, you've never seen a character like Monique before. Never like Ricky Smith. Never like Mrs. Smith. You know, I think everybody was so unique in what their characters were. And I'm just so glad that people are still talking about it now and they remember. You guys, this is like a, like huge. It's just wonderful to be remembered from that film. I love the film Benderoff did.
You know, and, you know, the other thing is, you know, you also, you know, got to be with another one of our heroes here. Of course, he played Lane Meyer, and you know who I'm referring to. Of course, our favorite role of his will always be his role in Con Air.
Oh, yes, yes. And Lane, I have to say, first of all, the actor who played Lane, I loved working with him. And Lane was so sweet and so romantic. And we had such a nice chemistry, I thought, on screen. And on off screen, we had a great time. Such a nice guy. So sweet. And I think he was like, if I'm not mistaken, just maybe 17 or I don't know if he was even 18 when we did the film, but he was so sweet. And I just was really fortunate to work with him. I even ran into him at a convention recently, not this recently, but like maybe a year ago or 2 years ago before the pandemic hit. And we had a great time. I mean, we just had a blast. I even said to him, we should do another movie together. Because I think the chemistry was so good.
Better Off 2, Better Off Dead 2, you guys have kids, and, you know, you guys host a foreign exchange. I mean, that'd be awesome. And if that movie happens, I want my residuals. Diana Franklin is our guest, 89.1 Ken's FM. We got 28 minutes here. We're going to do a roundtable, then we'll come back, and I'm going to ask you the tougher questions, and I'm sure Matthias will fill in with a few others, but Now, we'll start with Matthias, and we'll go to Granny Hoekstra. Now, Matthias, I know that you are a Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure mark, so what do you have for our guest, Diana Franklin? Go ahead.
Well, first off, I want to welcome you onto the show. Yes, you are talking to the man from every woman's greatest dream and every man's worst nightmare, North Dakota's number one heel, current EWI Woo! Diamond and ATP World Heavyweight Champion, Matthias here. Welcome onto our show.
And he is currently the last American virgin.
No.
Okay, go ahead.
We'll talk about that later on outside of the show. But anyway, I guess one of my questions to you would be, compared to being on like commercials or soap operas or film, what would you say was one of your more challenging projects, whether it was like on TV, a commercial, a film role? What was one of your more challenging things you ever had to take on?
And you can't say the show because that'd be too easy.
Darn it. No, you know, gosh, there were so many different things that were challenging. I mean, interestingly enough, some of the jobs that I didn't get perhaps are the most challenging because you know, auditioning, oh my gosh, it's like, you know, you get an audition, then you have a callback, then you have a third callback. So, I mean, I'm going to say just being an actress is probably the hardest thing I've ever done in the big picture because, you know, I mean, I auditioned for so many films and got so close on so many. A Karate Kid, I was got a callback on Flashdance. I got callbacks on Bachelor Party. I don't know. There were a lot of movies. And Amadeus, very close to that film. But, I mean, I would have to say, if you had to ask me, or even, honestly, auditioning for Bill and Ted 2, my own part, that was challenging. So, yeah, no, I think the auditioning is the hardest thing of all the things I've ever had to do. Sticking in there.
Those movies that you didn't make, just think, if you would have been in them, they probably would have been Oscar performances. Just think about that.
Aw, thank you. You're a sweetheart. You know, all these people, I always think, whoever gets the part, you know, it's the journey that they took. And for me, like, again, if I didn't get the jobs I didn't, you know, I get, I would never have I would never have done Even Better Off Dead and Bill and Ted's, you know, like I love those films. So I'm really happy about how things worked out. But yeah, no, you just never know. As an actor, your life is sort of like however the director or writer sees you, whoever casts, you know.
We have Diana Franklin as our guest here on 89.1 Kansas FM. We got 25 minutes. Now, Granny, I know that you used to watch a lot of films in the 80s. What do you have for our guest? Go ahead.
Because she was born before the 80s.
Well, that is true. I was before the 80s. And welcome to our show, where it's a pleasure to have you on. But I tell you, I was a big fan of As the World Turns. I mean, I still watch a couple of soap operas on CBS, you know, like Young and the Restless and Bold and Beautiful. But I watched As the World Turns and, you know, Guiding Light on the CBS soap operas for years. But I was a very avid fan of As the World Turns for many, many, many years. I mean, you know.
She used to record you on Beta.
Beta. Oh, my gosh. That's a long time ago. Wow. I remember Beta.
No, but to be I had my 60th birthday last week. I just turned 60 last week. So in 1979, I would have been like a junior in high school because I graduated high school in 1980.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, so, I mean, let me tell you something. You would have known me. I was, you know, I don't know if you remember the character Betsy. I was her friend. I played a friend of Betsy's, and I was supposed to be like the bad friend who made her have parties, and I hid my birth control pills in my shoes. My character was Lois Middleton, and they changed that character, Betsy. You know, it went from one actress to, you know, I think eventually, the girl from, there was a famous 80s actress who actually also played Betsy. I can't remember her name right now. But anyway, you probably saw me. Isn't that funny?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I did. What was the most, interesting thing about working with such a talented cast of As the World Turns? Because I know they had a lot of great actors and actresses on that story for many years. I mean.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, the woman who played Kim Richards, or the main woman, and I forgot her name right now. She recently passed. She's an excellent actress. She played the mom. She was a pro. This woman was an amazing dark-haired actress. And I'm so sorry because it's been so long to remember the names, but she was such a pro. And, boy, let me tell you, when you do a soap opera, you better know your lines because you get, like, maybe two takes. Maybe. I mean, usually it's one take and they move on. So that was excellent training as an actor to do. But also the girl who played Betsy, which was very funny, she was a regular on the show. And that girl, she was very grown up, okay? And I was like this innocent girl. I had I didn't do drugs. I wasn't really dating anyone. I was so innocent. And when I got on the show, I had to play this really, like, the girl who'd, like, been through everything. And she was the one who had all this experience. She had an older boyfriend. She was, like, so it was so funny when we worked together because I was sitting in a situation where I was, like, I think, you know, we did a scene and she was definitely like, you know, not quite all there. And I was like, you know, don't you have to ask me something, Betsy? And like, you know, it was just kind of like, I was actually like learning from her because I didn't, you know a lot of things. So anyway, very interesting. You know, a lot of, you know, actors are not who they play, you know, so it was very interesting to be on the show. But boy, she was talented. She knew her lines and she was a pro. And I was always, I admired her. I thought it was amazing that she could, you know, she was on the show for so long.
Diana Franklin's our guest here on 89.1 Kens FM. Unfortunately, we only got 21 minutes left. I wish it were 20 more years. But here's the thing: if our one guest is late, would you? I know. I said I only booked it for 30 minutes, but would you be willing to stay longer if our next guest is late?
Sure, I can hang. And I'm so excited, North Dakota. I've never. I don't know if anyone knows. I mean, I've never done a convention there. I would love to come there to do a convention. I'd love to meet
I am
going to
make
you.
That happen.
No.
I'm going to get
that
done.
Would be wonderful. So
and everybody, she did give me her phone number, so I can call her at any time as long as it's not 2 a.m.
That's true. That's true. Don't do that.
I actually live in Arkansas.
Whoa. And I've never been to Arkansas. I've been a lot of places. You know, I do conventions, and I go different places all over the country, and I do interviews, and I'm also doing, you know, still acting, so, you know, I get flown to places to shoot. In fact, I'm going actually to England in November to shoot a short film.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, traveling.
And if we can get you here, we can get you a good room at WoodSpring Suites of Fargo, one of our big sponsors here. So now I want to talk a little, and you got a book coming out, so we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But I want to talk a little bit about my favorite film of yours, which helped me get through my young adulthood, The Last American Virgin. And I'm just kind of curious, when you got the role, did you know that there was? You obviously knew because of the title, but do you know about being without apparel in some scenes that you had to do? Were you aware of that, or did you not know that your character would have to do that?
Oh no. When you're an actor, everything has to be told to you ahead of time. Yes. I knew that I had to do some scenes where I wasn't going to be wearing anything, and certainly wasn't something I had ever done before. That was the first film. And I did that film. What happened was I got the script, and I really had to think about it because I didn't know, you know, that's kind of, it's a big deal, you know, and I was young. And so even though I'd worked for years and years, I had to really, you know, I asked my parents, I had my family, like, you know, how do you feel about it? Because obviously when you do something like that, you're influencing the people around you. And, you know, you want to be considerate, I guess. It depends on what people are, you know, how people around you feel too. I mean, at least for me, you know, I mean, other people, maybe it doesn't matter, but I wanted, you know, I knew that if I did something like that, it would be affecting my family. But at the same time, I had a European family, and if they were more like, rather me not have, like, you know, violence and guns and, like, be in that situation, they were, like, totally fine. And also my parents were a lot older, so they, you know, they lived their life, and they were kind of like, you know, now you live yours, do what you want. And so I was, the most important thing when I got that script was that the part wasn't just about, you know, the nudity. The part was, the show was more about, there was a story, and that my character was had depth. And I feel like that, you know, you can't get away watching that movie without, you know, seeing that there was more to my character than meets the eye. So, you know, I think everyone was very taken, you know, if you've ever seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. That end, the ending of the film, in fact, we thought it was going to be changed. We thought, oh, you're going to change the story. You're not going to end it like this. This is an American film. And the director said, no, you know, this was based on my true life. It was a true story. So, you know, we tried to make it as real and true. And I think the film is still, you know, still holds because it's a time capsule of the 80s. Last American Virgin, you know, talks about, it has 80s subject matter. It's got, you know, music, a great soundtrack, incredible, you know, style. You know, you go back and you feel the 80s, and it's really real. I think a lot of guys can relate to it. So, and women, I think, you know, you can check it out.
It was just released on Blu-ray as well. But the only thing I'm curious, though, do you regret, though, that you decided to continue your relationship with the jerk from Goonies?
Oh, yeah. You know what? If it was me, I would have picked Gary. And, you know, so I remember saying that the whole time. I'm like, oh, my gosh, like if it was just me. But as my character, I'm going to say to the audience, I made a mistake. And I'm sorry, Gary. I made a mistake. I should have gone with the good guy, but, you know. I just was, you know, the other guy was a little bit too, he wooed me, you know. And that's, I think, the thing, you know. Girls are, some girls don't have a sense of who they are. They don't have a center. And then they kind of go with whoever says, I like you, and whoever's the one. I mean, I always think, like, why didn't Gary fight for me? Why didn't, you know, he go after me? Could have made me feel more wanted. I don't know. So that ending makes everybody think a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I know. I would have. I know. I would have. I would have went after you. But I, as a matter of fact, I, I, I actually fell more in love with the character from Better Off Dead. I always wanted to date a gal that was from another country. Well, actually, I did for a while because the cheerleaders would never talk. Not that you care, but the cheerleaders would never talk to me. I mean, you know, the girls from the Spanish club were fine, but, you know, I always wanted to date a cheerleader, and now I have one. Now I'm married to one. But anyway, we have Diana Franklin as our... We have our Diane Franklin as our guest here on 89.1 KENS FM, and we have about 15 minutes. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about, then we'll come back and ask you about a few more of your films, but the main thing that we want to talk about is that you have a book that you wrote, and I believe it's called Diana Franklin, The Excellent Adventures of the Last American French Exchange Babe of the 80s, and... let's talk about the book. Tell us what's involved. Why you decided to write it? Is there any pictures? Is it a pop-up book so guys like me can understand it? Let's talk about it.
All right. So here's the cool thing. All right. I have actually three books, and if you look up Diane Franklin books, you will see these three books. The first one is The Excellent Adventures, the long title with The Excellent Adventures. And the reason why I wrote the long title is because you've got to laugh. You've got to put a smile on your face when you say it. It's way too long. And so it gives you a setup that the book is light and fun. It has tons of pictures. And The Excellent Adventures is for somebody who has no idea who I am, who would like to see what the 80s are like. How did an actress get from, like, the suburbs to being a movie star? How did this happen? So if you're an actor or you're curious, like, what my career was like, this shows everything, okay, in my whole life. It also has little snippets of my daughter, because she is a filmmaker, too, and she's, like, on TikTok and all that stuff now. So you get to, like, you know, in 2012 where she was at. And then my second book is called The Excellent Curls. Excellent Curls, you see, like, this sultry look and this big curly hair. And that is for fans of The Last American Virgin. If you love that movie, this book, The Excellent Curls, curly hair, curls, you must get. It has photos you will never see anywhere. It has subject matter, and I talk about things deeply, and it's just, I'm telling you, you will be so happy you got it. It's one of those things, like, it'll take you back in time, and you'll hear how my life. And then there's tons of pictures. There's also Better Off Dead pictures in that as well. But for those who like Last American Virgin, get The Excellent Curls. And my new book that I just came out with this year is The Excellent Comedy of the Last American French Exchange Babe of the 80s. And that one is all about Better Off Dead. And, boy, it's the special features that you wish had happened in the 80s. I mean, now it's finally coming out, and it's huge. This book is, I have had nothing but positive response from it. And Savage Steve Holland, who wrote and directed the movie, he gave me all these behind-the-scenes things that I didn't even know. And I interviewed Curtis, who was Charles DeMar. I interviewed Beth. I interviewed The Paperboy. It's got so many
that little jerk.
Great interviews. Yeah, right?
Now, so, you know, Matthias, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but Matthias, you know, in the movie, have you seen Better Off Dead, Matthias? Have you seen that?
Excuse me. It might have been once, but I am not too familiar with it right now. It was way back when I saw it.
You've got
to
check it out. Highly recommend
it. If you know, in the movie, she helped repair... a car that you would love to have drive you to the ring. She helped repair a Camaro in that movie.
Well, as long as she's in the Camaro, then I'm okay with that.
Nice. I like it. Yeah, it's great.
Now I got to ask you a couple other things about behind the scenes of Better Off Dead, as long as we're talking. When you have them pick up the Camaro, and he was, you guys were helping him change the oil, and he got the oil all over. That was chocolate, or what was that?
Yeah, it was Hershey syrup, which, by the way, made me break out in, like, hysterical laughter, like crying laughter, because I didn't know what had happened, and we all knew that it wasn't, you know, obviously real oil, but they put it through a funnel, and it hit Lane in the face, and oh my gosh, like, cry laughter, like, that was such a great scene, that whole scene together, because it was just such a sweet thing that my, you know, my character Monique, she is very good, very capable of fixing a car and skiing down the K-12. She's not afraid, you know. She's kind of like, you do this and you will be fine, you know. Just go after it. Be brave. You can do it, you know. So she's a really great role model for girls, I think. I mean, you tell me, Scott, if you thought it was good. If you like,
well, I don't know who. I'm the icon. I don't know who the Scott guy is, but anyway,
Icon, dear icon.
anyway, yeah. So I'm going to ask you. I don't want to spend too much time on the movie, but I just have a few other behind the scenes questions. The next question I want to ask you about is the skiing. Was that a stunt double? Was that you really skiing? And was that a real slope?
I was skiing in all the shots that were kind of coming into the scene or away, because I do ski, but I did not do the fancy skiing down, the trick skiing. Mostly that's because, I mean, first of all, I don't ski as well as those skiers, but the other part is that they don't usually like actors, the lead actors, to do their own stunts, because if they hurt themselves, they're out. And I actually, that actually happened in Amadeus. The lead actress, Meg Tilly, broke her leg when she was filming Amadeus, and they had to replace her, and that's why I got the opportunity to, it was between me and Elizabeth Ferret, you know, the other girl for the part. So all I can say is you don't know, you know, a situation, but yeah, that it wasn't, it couldn't have been me because of the legal ramifications. You couldn't do it.
And for our fans, our regular fans that are listening, as you know, if you go to our Facebook page, Added to Air, Monday Live Monday, you like that. You go to Ken's FM 89.1 page, you like that. Do a $10 a month donation, power shower, you automatically get qualified to win an autographed picture or autographed memorabilia from our current guests, past guests, or future guests. Now, would you be willing to send us a few autographs for giveaways, maybe a couple books, I don't know, an autographed picture to me, because, you know, I love you
because
so
you
much.
Have the icon. You are the icon. I like this.
Well, you're an icon, too, when you think about it.
Well, from icon to icon, I'll take it. That would be lovely. Yes, of course. I will send you photos and, yes, some, and a book to, like, be able to, you know, maybe there will be people who are interested in having the book. That would be wonderful.
Awesome. And then I guess my next question is, and then we'll go back to the book, but the one scene in there at the beginning when Lane opened his closet and he had all those hangers with all the best pictures on there, did you get to keep one of those hangers, or did the actor said whose pictures were on there, did she take them all?
Oh, I wish that, you know, you just asked a beautiful question, because the actress who played Beth was so sad. She actually was sick for a day, and after they shot that scene, she wanted to come back and get the hangers, and the next day, gone. I don't know who has them. They're somewhere in the universe. Someone's got them, but nobody from that we knew got it. So someone out there, please, if you've got them, send at least one to Beth, because she really needs it. She really, really wanted it, so. Yeah.
Diane Franklin's our guest here on 89.1 Ken's FM, and we got about 7 minutes here, so we can do this here real quick. If our fans want to check you out and see you, do you got a Facebook, an Instagram, a YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, TikTok? What do you got?
Okay, I've got Actress Diane Franklin on Instagram. So Instagram, Actress Diane Franklin. Twitter is Diane Franklin 80, 80, no F. And Facebook, go to Diane Franklin Official fan page, because if you look up Diane Franklin's Facebook, I have, like, I kid you not, like 3,000 people on a list for me who want to be on my Facebook because it's full. So, the group page, which is the official fan page, I submit things as well, but I have someone else who takes care of that with me. So, stay connected, because I'm also on TikTok, but I think it's the real Diane Franklin on TikTok. I just started that, and I have a secret. I'm going to actually be coming out with a music video. So if you contact me, stay connected with me, you'll be the first to know about it. So that's very fun.
And I guess my next question is, you know, like I say, unfortunately, we only got a few minutes here. You know, if we haven't scared you way too much, maybe you'd be willing to join us again at some point. But what when you decided to write all these different books, how long did it take you after you wrote your first one? Were the next several easier, or the more that you wrote, the harder it became?
When I first, when I wrote my first book, first of all, I didn't even think that, like, I didn't know anyone would even remember me. So my first book actually was a hardcover. I only made 100 copies of them, and I actually handmade them, and I thought, okay, if I get sold out on these, then I'll publish. So when I first did the books, I brought them to conventions, and they sold out. So, and they were beautiful. They were in color. They're really, like, collector's items. So I thought, okay, I'll write the book. And I really wrote it for people who I thought, okay, if you don't know about my career and you want to know how does somebody go from knowing no one, there's no connections, to becoming famous? How does this happen? Hard work, you know, the focus, sacrifices. So I wrote this book. And when I was done with it, I thought, well, I'm done. I've done it and no more. But then a couple of years went by, and I realized I had a lot more to say, and it had to do with Last American Virgin. So I thought, oh, wow, I really got to write a book about this, because it was just more, you know, just it was, I just had more information that I wanted to share with people. And then when that was done, I thought, okay, well, I'm done now. But I ran into a fan at a convention, and he said to me, I have a coat from the film, from Better Off Dead, and that coat is the original coat I wore as Monique. And so I thought, I had a fan who said, you know, you should, I always took pictures with people wearing the coat. He said, you should have a book, and you should put all the pictures of people wearing the coat in your book. And I went, oh, my gosh, now I have to write the book. And then I put the word out to all the people on the film who were involved and said, would you like to contribute? So the book is a labor of love. It took me like 2 years to write this last one. Seriously, like it usually takes me a couple of years. And wow, it's great. So it wasn't the intention of writing it. It's just I do have more to say, and that's how these books happen. So, you know, and it's a labor of love. This is all it is. So what you see is me. You're going to get to know me.
So hopefully, you know, when you write your fourth book, you'll let me write the foreword for you. And you can have a chapter on how to hang up on a guy from Fargo, North Dakota. That'd be cool. Diana Franklin's our guest here. We got about 3 minutes here left with Diana Franklin. But the cool thing is here, Diana, that you know, being in all the different films and, you know, Jell-O commercials and Coca-Cola commercials and coffee commercials. Is there one product that you always wanted to endorse that you never got to?
That is perhaps one of the coolest questions I've ever gotten. Boy, I never thought about that. Well, yeah. I mean, I love chocolate, and I would love to do chocolate. I would love to do coffee, and I would love to do, I guess, makeup. Always makeup is pretty, you know, so that's a fun thing to do. Or wrinkle cream, then, you know, whatever, that'll come up. But, I would have to say my favorite is dark chocolate. So I'll say dark chocolate to start.
And then real quick here, we only got a few seconds or so, but you got another movie coming out, Clay Zombies. Have you started filming that, or is that just in the developmental stages right now?
Oh, so that film actually is now available on Amazon. That's done. I have, and by the way, yeah, let's talk about, I just do have some movies that people, if they want to check out my acting now. Amityville Murders, that is, I think, you can get it on YouTube, I think, and you'll see me in the trailer. And I talk like this, so don't be confused. I'm a woman from Long Island. It was based on a true story about what happened in Amityville. And I also am in Ted Bundy, Ted Bundy, American Boogeyman. I have a scene in it, but my daughter is in the film, and she is the one who fights off Ted Bundy. So see that movie, because you'll see it's my mini-me. I guess, you know. She's beautiful.
Awesome.
And her name is Olivia De Laurentiis. So if you go want to check out on TikTok, she's under she does comedy under Olivia and Sid, S-Y-D. But you can also see her in the American Boogeyman. And she's fighting off Ted Bundy. So there you go.
Well, I'll tell you what, Diana, you have been so most wonderful. Like I say, I told everybody when I was in elementary school and junior high that I'd eventually be able to get your phone number and call you and take you on a date. I won't be able to do the date thing until you come out here. I saw how big your husband is, so that's probably not going to happen. But I'll just send Matthias to distract him while I take you out. Well, I'll tell you what, thank you very much, Diana. You have been wonderful. I'll contact you after the show, let you know how everything went, and I won't call you at 2 in the morning anymore, but I appreciate everything you do for us, and you are awesome. Thank you very much.
Merci, buckets. All right. Au revoir.
Parlez-vous français. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back with our next guest here in just a little bit. But right now we need to take a quick little time out, and we will be back after these messages from our sponsors. So we'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, the new clocks are here. The new clocks are here. Yes, for a limited time, you can get your very own 89.1 KENS FM clock. For a $25 donation, you can get a classic analog round-faced clock with the 89.1 KENS FM logo on the front. Just go to our website, www.kensfm.com, and under the More Merch tab, you will find the clocks along with numerous other new merch you can order. Get yours now while supplies last. We have these in limited quantity, so order now at www.kensfm.com.
And we are live here on 89.1 KENS FM, coming out of the green room, stepping out of it, and walking down the aisle and stepping onto the court. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you probably one of the greatest basketball players in the history of the Detroit Pistons. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the coach of the Detroit Pistons as well. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Ray Scott.
Hey, this is Ray Scott. You're listening to the Attitude Era Monday, live Monday on 89.1 KENS FM with your host, the icon, the big swing, the godmother of wrestling, Granny Hulkster, and the modern day nightmare Matthias.
So how are you today, sir? Thank you for joining us.
I am well. And you should be thankful because I am octogenarian. And as you know, we're way past my bedtime, right, my friend?
Well, you know, I do apologize. And that's why I'm glad you're still not coaching, because how would you be able to enforce your curfew of your players when you can't make it yourself?
Well, now they allow you to hire guys to do that.
Ray Scott is our guest here on 89.1 KENS FM. We got about 28 minutes here. So should we refer to you as Coach, Mr. Scott, the Ray Man? How should we address you, sir?
When you sign the check, you put just Coach is fine.
Oh, because usually when people want to sign a check, they say, my best friends call me Cash.
I thought better.
So here's what we're going to do here, Coach. If you want to give us a little background about yourself, and then we'll ask you some questions. We'll do a roundtable, and I'll ask you the tougher questions. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, a little bit about myself. At 6'9 and about 300 pounds, there is not a little bit to tell. I've just recently written a book, so pretty much it's my correlation of all that I've done in coming from South Philly and going to school in Portland, Oregon, out there in the Northwest, and then growing up East Coast and then moving to the Midwest after being drafted by the Pistons, settling here for the last 60-some years and having three wonderful children and a wonderful wife and just living in a Union town, it just had so much attraction to me with all of that background, that miasma of background that gets thrown into your life. It just had a big attraction for me to stay in the Motor City. And sometimes I think it's because I came here in 1961 just as Motown was beginning.
You were picked in the first round, the fourth overall pick in that, the 61 draft.
Yes, yes. So, you know, it's like the story is like most of us with kids. You know, we jump around until we settle down. And I happen to be fortunate enough to settle in Detroit, Michigan. But I had stints of living in Baltimore, where I played for the Baltimore Bullets. And I lived in Virginia, where I played for the Virginia Squires with the great Dr. J. And then I came back and coached, and I just made this area my home. Because a lot of people that don't see me around anymore, they thought I had moved back to Philadelphia. But I said, no, I love the Midwest, and I love the style of living we had here and we have here. So it just seemed a very likely place for me to settle down and be happy.
You know, and the other thing is about, when you were the coach, you were the coach of the year in 1974. And, I would definitely want to move there if I was coach of the year for that, for a team, you know what I mean?
Thank you, Scott. I never thought of it that way. But that recognition is, and that embrace, yeah, that's good. I like that. Yeah, that's beautiful. You know, where you're successful and where people embrace you is where you would be most comfortable settling down. So, yeah, I like that.
Well, I'll tell you what, we need to take a quick little legal time out here, and then we'll be back after this little legal ID, and then we're going to do a roundtable, and then we got a little surprise for you, and then we're going to come back to me. I'm going to ask you the tougher question, so give us about 10 seconds.
Okay.
You're listening to 89.1 KENZ FM, KNNZ FM, Holly, Fargo-Moorhead. Independent public radio for Fargo-Moorhead and the Valley. Also on the web at www.kensfm.com.
And Ray Scott is our guest here on 89.1 KENZ FM. We have about 24 minutes here with the coach. Coach, actually, we have a caller first that we want to go to that wants to ask you a question. Caller 2509, what do you have for our guest, Ray Scott, the coach, the greatest in the history of the Detroit Pistons? Go ahead.
The greatest in the history of the world. That, I can't really argue with that. I guess the main thing here, and listening to the show and following, I'm not a huge historian on Detroit Pistons history, but looking at...
Because he likes Dallas.
Not Dallas, not basketball. That's my football team. But looking at the league now, as opposed to when you were both involved as a player and a coach, are you a fan of how the game has progressed nowadays, or are you not so much of a fan, or do you prefer the older, you know, the times when you were around it? Or because looking at it now and having played basketball in high school and college myself, and watching the old documentaries on the Jordan days and the Bird days and things, it's just, I don't know. Basketball to me, like the NBA to me, is, unless it's the playoffs, it's hard for me to watch. I'll watch the playoffs, but I just don't.
Yeah.
I don't love it like I do college basketball anymore. But I mean, how do you feel about the new age of the game?
I hear that quite a bit because I too am from the historical era. I go back to Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, Oscar Robertson, Elgin Baylor, Maurice Stokes, Jerry West. You know, guys that were great proponents of basic fundamental basketball. And so that's how I learned to play the game. And when I grew up in Philadelphia, that's how we played the game. And you wanted to become very proficient at doing those things we were doing then. I think with the evolution of television, I really believe that basketball today is played for the television audience. That's why you have players today taking the most thrilling shot in the game is a 25-foot shot. And we were taught that that was the worst shot in basketball as kids. But now that's you see guys running around doing it all the time. I could not coach today because if I coached today and somebody took a 25-foot shot, even if he made it, he'd be sitting on the bench next to me. And so, you know, with that in mind, I just always said the game has just evolved to where it is made for TV. The two most spectacular shots in basketball are the dunk shot, guys throwing the ball down, and the long, what we call the bad shot, the three-point shot. Well, that's the way the game is played today. So the game that you're talking of, you're speaking of, that you played, and the game that I played, that's not the game the way it is today, but it's the game that's made for interest, getting people to watch the spectacular plays, and it's the game that's made for, I thought, and I still think, that brought women to the game, that have really helped women become more proficient at the game.
You know,
At 6 foot nine, hold on one second. I got at 6'9", did you play center or did you, or were you more of like a forward?
I was more of a forward because
he's a power forward
in
the center.
Now you would call it power forward. I played a little center, but my last 2 years when I played with Julius Erving in Virginia and Charlie Scott, I played a lot of center. But that was in the ABA. In the NBA, I was primarily a forward, and you know that's the way our roles were defined. But it's interesting when you say that because that too, the naming of those positions, that too had its evolution. And you know, and now you have 6'9" inch guys playing guard. Remember, Magic Johnson was 6'9" inches, and he became a guard.
Well I was going to say, guys today, 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", are playing. And even the big guys, like you look at like the Dirkies of the world, the 7-footer, 7-1, Kevin Durant, 7'1", he's popping up pulling 30-foot threes, you know. So it's just different nowadays that the big guys have range and are shooting from the outside as well. So it's just crazy.
You know, Coach Scott, the one thing that the caller forgot to mention is he also holds a record for missing the most bunny layups in his high school's history. Ray Scott is our guest here. We're on 89.1 Kids FM. We got about 28 minutes. We're going to do a roundtable, and we're going to talk a little bit about the book, because that's why you're here. Matthias, I know you're a big sports guy. What do you have for our guest, Coach Ray Scott?
Well, first off, I want to welcome you onto the show. Yes, you're talking to the man from every woman's greatest dream and every man's worst nightmare, North Dakota's number one heel, Matthias, on the show. Welcome.
So you'll probably never see him on a basketball court.
Well, I did play basketball back when I was in high school, but eventually my job really caught up to me, and I really wanted to make some money to go out to college, so I stopped playing basketball, but I continued on with football. My main question for you, sir, would be, was there any player in the game that you wished you could have played against or got the chance to be able to coach but never got the opportunity to?
You know, that's a great question. I would love to have coached Julius Erving. The things that he could do on a basketball court were phenomenal as a coach. As a player, because I got to play with Wilt Chamberlain and against Bill Russell and Oscar, great players, and I thought I came along in basketball's greatest era. So I got to play against a lot of great competition, but, you know, I wish I could have played with Willis Reed because he abused me so much in playing against him. So I think that's maybe one of those nightmares that could have gone away if I'd gotten to play with Willis Reed and the New York Knicks.
See, that's why I don't like Willis Reed to this day because of how he treated you on the court.
well, we're in unison. Although he is a great guy, he is a super guy.
Coach Ray Scott's our guest here on 89.1 Kens FM, and we have about 25 minutes here with Ray. I want to introduce you, Ray, Coach, to Granny Hulkster. Now, she was born when basketball was invented, but I know that she has a few questions for you. So go ahead, Granny. What do you got?
Well, welcome to our show. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank
I was
you.
Born in 1962. I just had a birthday last week. I just turned 60 last Monday, as a matter of fact. So very, very proud of my age. But, you know, I'm not one of these women that are ashamed to talk about my age. But
hey, Ray, that's your whole career right there.
I mean, I watch some basketball, you know. I don't watch a lot of basketball. Now, my son, I have a 35-year-old son, and he loves basketball. I mean, I think he could tell you every team, every player. I mean, he loves to watch the sport. I don't watch a lot of it, but I do watch it every once in a while. But what was more of a challenge for you, actually playing basketball or just coaching?
I think as you go in phases, Granny, I kind of did it in quadrants. I think you have to learn to play. That has its difficulties. Then you have to learn to be a teammate because, you
mm-hmm.
know, you can only put five guys on the floor at a time. And, you know, you have to get over yourself because you're not going to be on the floor for all of the minutes of the game. So that's,
mm-hmm.
that's a learning piece. And then the other thing is you have to learn how to win. And the biggest thing I had to learn was how to coach because coaching was not something that I intended to do. I just happened to fall into it. It just fell into place. So learning to coach was quite difficult because now you're managing 12 different people with 12 different ideas, 12 different thoughts about the way to do things. So that's a good question. I never thought about it, but that's how I would break it up.
That's awesome.
We have Coach Ray Scott as our guest here. We're gonna move on here, Coach, and we're gonna talk a little bit about your book. And I'm gonna ask you some tougher questions. You know, because when I played basketball, I'm proud of this. I actually hold the most records for being sat on the bench for mouthing off to the referees. And I'm
uh-huh.
still proud of that, but we'll talk about that a little bit. But let's talk a little bit about your book. Tell us the title and what motivated you to write it, and also the fact that you always had the best hair in the NBA.
Well, thank you. My goodness. I love this show. I'm calling back next week. The motivation for the book came years and years and years ago from my wife, but I, like most husbands, that message took a while to get home. Right around my 80th birthday, or just around the time of the pandemic, we found out that we were going to be in the house for quite some time together. And so one of the things that kind of fell out of the air was, you're going to write a book. And that was my wife's suggestion. And she said that she felt that, you know, I had lived the parallel life in the United States because I grew up an African-American kid in an African-American neighborhood. I was blessed to go to college, like I said, at the University of Portland in Oregon. And so we started talking about the book and the journey that I had in the United States, but also the parallel journey that I had in the NBA. And so I had a really good seat to see this country grow from the prospects of 1960 when John Fitzgerald Kennedy became the president. And he was the first Catholic president in America. And boy, that was a real difficult election. But one of the things that that President Kennedy said is that because of the era, we were coming out of that era of segregation, but Dr. King and Malcolm X and Rosa Parks, there were people just doing all kinds of work to try to bring us together as a nation. And John Fitzgerald Kennedy said, going forward in the 60s, as I am president, I wanted to bring our Negro brethren into the frontiers of America, that where we're going. And I never forgot that. And just not too long after that, 1961, I was drafted into the NBA. And so now I'm, you know, perched in this prestigious place looking at America, but still with a lot of the same problems, because one of the things that had existed in me psychologically was the murder of Emmett Till, who was a 14-year-old kid that was murdered in Mississippi. And so that stayed in my mind. And then we kind of began this tumultuous time in America with the 60s, and it just became something you would not believe. If you weren't around, and I know Granny was only being born at that time, but I was here. And so as a 22-year-old, I was seeing this world and feeling this movement in the country, and it was civil rights, and it was voting rights, and then it was the Vietnam War, and then it was a change in music, and then it was a change in clothing, and then we had Motown. So all of this stuff was going around me as I'm growing up in this country and trying to understand it, take it all in, and put it all together, and still go out and play a good game of basketball. And so, you know, it was just, as I state in the book, it was just that 60s that kind of brought all of this together through the 60s, through the 70s, because in the 70s I went from playing to coaching. And so, you know, again, it just, I don't know, it just became an unusually great world, because all of these changes were going on and people were coming to us and asking us questions about it and what we thought and how we felt, and no one even cared what we felt or thought prior to that in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And I was born in 1938, but not that anyone talked to me in 1938. I was only 2 years old, but it just, you know, you just hear all of these things and feel all of these things. And that was a big part of America's growth. So for my observation post for that growth was the NBA. And then here's this league that's growing that started in 1947. And in 1950, they decided that although our league was segregated, we're going to integrate. So they brought in three African-American players. They brought in Earl Lloyd from West Virginia State University. They brought in, which was the HBCU or black school. They brought in Chuck Cooper, who was from Duquesne, a university out of Pittsburgh. And they bought the contract of Sweetwater Clifton. So all of a sudden, with these 80 or 90 players that constituted the NBA, you have now three African-Americans on the floor. And they were the guys that put their toe in the water and were first exposed to America in that integrated way. But the fellows that had the largest impact was the Chamberlains, the Russells, the Oscar Robertson, the Elgin Baylors, the super players, because the NBA at that time was a spectator sport. People went to the games to see the players. We weren't on television, and there was only some radio. So nobody really knew who we were. They had to read about us in the papers. So with that development of those players that they said are great basketball players, all of a sudden that begins in the NBA, this decree that we're now going to bring in African-American players and build this league. And so thinking about that, if you're thinking about the laws of integration as opposed to segregation, and now we have these sports leagues, I thought that the NBA was a model of what the country could become.
Coach Ray Scott is our guest here, and the book is called The NBA in Black and White, The Memories of a Trailblazing NBA Player and Coach. Now, the one thing I like about this cover, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. For those of you who listen to our show regularly, if you go to our Facebook page, Attitude Era, Monday Live Money, like that. Go to 89.1 Ken's FM page, like that. Do a $10 a month donation for the tower. You automatically get qualified to win an autographed picture or some memorabilia from current guest, past guest, or virtue guest. Ray, would you be willing to send us a few autographs for giveaways?
Absolutely. I got your note today, and we will be working on that tomorrow.
Okay, perfect. And then I hope you like that basketball card I made for you, too, as well.
I didn't get the card.
I just texted it to you.
Oh, okay. Then I don't have it in front of me. Okay.
Like I say, you do have the best hair in the whole league, you know.
Well, you sound like a talented man.
Hey, you guys, I got that on tape. I'm going to use that. He said I'm a talented guy. I got that. So now, Ray, I want to ask you a few more questions about, your career in basketball. And, I mean, you have many accomplishments. Like I say, first round, fourth overall pick in 1961 by the Detroit Pistons. Your basketball numbers, of course, my dad gave these to me. You were number 22, 12, and 31. You played for the Allentown Jets, the Detroit Pistons, the Baltimore Bullets, the Virginia Squires. Then you coached the Detroit Pistons. You also were the first African-American coach to win Coach of the Year in 1974. You averaged 14.3 points a game, 9.8 rebounds a game, and 2.2 assists per game. You weren't much in the assist category because you were hogging the ball all the time, like my dad said when you played the Lakers, and you didn't want to pass it off. You just want to drive right to the hoop. So that's why you weren't very high on the assist list, right?
Well, I can't come on this show again if you're going to expose me like that.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. And, you were also named one of the 30 greatest all-time Pistons in you were also inducted into the Philadelphia Sports Hall of Fame, the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame, and now you're going to be a New York Times best-selling author. So with all these accomplishments, what is next? What is the next pinnacle that you want to reach besides being on the show? I know this is the peak, but what do you want to do after this?
I'm going to write another book.
Can I write the forward for you?
Sure. Yes, we could. Well, I'm sure we could agree on that. It's going to be about boxing. We're going to write a book on boxing in black and white. We're going to tell how boxing started in the 1900s and with John L. Sullivan and how it came from John L. Sullivan up to Jack Johnson to Joe Louis after Joe Louis, we had Rocky Marciano, then we had Floyd Patterson, then Muhammad Ali. My book will end with Muhammad Ali.
All right. And then, Matthias, you know how I know, Matthias, you're a wrestler, but you know how to take a hit, right?
Oh, of course. I mean, I've done it for years, especially in football or pro wrestling or even doing my security work. I know I'm quite used to taking hits.
So this next book that you're going to write about boxing, when have you started writing it, or is it just in the developmental stage right now, or is it completed, or you're just waiting to release it?
Well, we're developmental. We have to, our contract says we have to have it ready to go by next summer. So it'll be released probably next June.
Would you be willing to come back on with us before it's released and talk about it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, Lissa, she's our mouthpiece. She's the one that works for us. So if she thinks that I have work and you guys will have me, I'm sure I'll be back with you.
Well, I'll tell you what, as a matter of fact, not that I'm bragging here, Coach, but we are booked up until the end of 2023. But what's interesting is you mentioned that the book is due out in June. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to Lisa tomorrow, and I'm going to get you booked up. Let's see. And I know this is riveting for our fans, but I'm going to look right here. The first Monday in June of 2023 is June 5th. What I'm going to do is I'm going to contact Lisa tomorrow, and I'm going to get you on June 5th, 2023, and we're going to do it at 9:15 p.m., so it won't be as late, so you can make bed by your curfew, so, you know, your wife won't get upset and make you fish sticks for being late.
That's right. Well, as you know, you can call me the Gorton's man. I've eaten a lot of fish sticks.
We have Coach Ray Scott as our guest here, and we have we have about 10 minutes here left with the coach. So now, when you, I want to ask you about the NBA draft. And I understand if you don't want to answer this, but when you were drafted, is there like any team that you like are hoping? Geez, I hope they don't pick me. Or is there like one team you really wanted to go to? Or would you not want to answer that?
No, I would want to answer that because it's a big part of my history. The reason I was drafted number 4 in the nation is because of Red Auerbach, who was the coach of the Boston Celtics, who had told me that back in 1961 he wanted to draft me because I had played for him in the Catskills. The Catskills was the mountain resort in New York, and it was specifically geared to our Jewish brethren. And I worked there for a summer as a bellhop, as did Wilt Chamberlain. He worked there for 2 summers as a bellhop. So I knew about that, and I knew Red because Red was the athletic director up for the building, for the resort. And so I got to know Red, and I played for him, and he said he wanted to draft me. And he shared that information with Earl Lloyd, who became my mentor. But Earl Lloyd said, well, if Red Auerbach's going to draft this guy, and he's got the championship team up there in Boston with Bill Russell and Bob Cousy and Bill Sharman and Tommy Heinsohn and that group, he said, if they're going to draft Ray, he must be pretty good, so we're going to draft him. So that's
well, you
I
know.
Came to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now in the 61 draft, let's look who went before you. You had Walt Bellamy, who I don't even know. He was drafted by the Chicago Packers. Good thing they dropped their Packer name and went to the Bulls. Then you had Tom Stilf. He was drafted by the New York Knicks. Then you had Larry Siegfried, not of Siegfried and Roy. He went to the Cincinnati Royals. I don't know who they became. And then we had Ray Scott, the Detroit Pistons. Then after you, it was Wayne Yates, who went to the Lakers. My dad really wanted you to go to Lakers because he was a big Laker fan, because a lot of people don't know that the Lakers actually started in Minnesota. They actually were the Minneapolis Lakers.
Correct.
There's no lakes in Los Angeles. Trust me on this. Then it went Ben Warley. He went to the Syracuse Nations. Then Tom Marichet, he went to the Philadelphia Warriors. Then Cleo Hill, he went to the St. Louis Hawks. Gary Phelps went to the Boston Celtics. And to round out the top 10 was Whitney Martin, who went to the New York Knicks. Now, the interesting thing is, in the top 23 for the first round, you were the only one drafted by the Pistons.
Yes.
Now,
yes, was...
you mentioned where you wanted to go, but is there like, and I don't know much about the NBA back in the 60s because that's my dad's wheelhouse, but and I don't know who the bad teams were back then, but is there like one team you're like going, geez, I hope I don't go there, like in like for the NFL, it's like the Cleveland Browns is where quarterbacks go to pass, but. Back then in the NBA, who was the bad teams back in the NBA in the 60s?
Well, I thought I was going to be a Knick. I thought I could have been a Cincinnati Royal. Neither of them drafted me, so I became a Piston. But there was in those days, because the opportunities were not great, I will say, because of the segregation and the integration that was going on, you were thankful, my friend. You were thankful to be drafted by anyone because what you had presented to you was an opportunity. And that's what we were praying for. And that's what we were working for. We were working to get opportunities. So any place you could go, you would go. But if I had my druthers, I would have been a Boston Celtic, of course, because that's where I knew I wanted. But the Pistons made me at home. I worked for them for 10 years, six as a player and four as a coach. And so I think it worked out quite well, and I'm still here in Michigan. My family, we're all Pistons fans, so it worked rather well. You know, I think we have presented and put where we're supposed to be spiritually.
You know, I'm kind of curious. You know, you got to play against Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Wilt Chamberlain. I'm just kind of curious, what is it like standing right next to Wilt Chamberlain, and how high did you have to look up to look him in the eye?
Well, you know, I grew up in high school with Wilt. Well, I was 14 and Wilt was 16. And at that time, I was 6'8 in high school and Wilt was 6'11.
So you're the one that did all his homework then?
He just had to copy whatever was on my paper. No, he wouldn't have passed if he had done that. But Wilt was unique. We're doing a special on Showtime for Wilt. But Wilt was a very special basketball player, as was Kareem, and they were very close. And I remember being with them up at Kutcher's at one time, and I was standing there, and I looked up at Wilt, and towering over Wilt, honest to goodness, by at least maybe shoulder and a head, was Kareem. And I told Wilt then, I said, "Well, I am so unused to looking at you and seeing someone taller than you, because I've never witnessed anything like that in my life." And until I got to the NBA. But
Coach Ray Skazor, yes, here we got about 4 minutes left with Coach. Now, real quick, yes, here, Coach, if our fans want to check you out, you got a Facebook, a YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, a TikTok, and where can they get your book?
To get the book, if you have a Barnes & Noble, or you have access to Amazon, or a Walmart, or JCPenney, or even just your bookstore, your friendly bookstore, they can order it from Seven Stories Publishing out of New York. So the book is accessible. I like to think that people would want to get my book. In fact, one of the copies of books that I'm up against is a book out called Muggsy. Have you ever heard of Muggsy?
Muggsy Bogues
was a professional basketball player. And Muggsy Bogues was 5'3". And he was a professional basketball player. And so I said, if you want the long of it, you ask for my book, NBA Black and White. You want a short book, get Muggsy's book.
And then one thing I do want to ask you about, I know that you are good friends with this individual, and I'm going to try and do my best Vince McMahon here, but I want to know what it's like being friends with Miss Aretha Franklin.
Oh, my goodness. That's so many people. You know, that was one of the greatest nights of my life. Very quickly, Scott, I was playing in my first year, and we traveled to Indianapolis, Indiana, and after the game, my roommate and I went to a club called the Pink Poodle in Indianapolis, Indiana. And at the Pink Poodle was this singer from Detroit. They advertised she was from Detroit. And we go to this club, and this club is packed. And I'm sitting there, and the place was so crowded. I think there was like one empty seat in the club. And the band finishes playing. They take their break, and down to that one seat comes Miss Aretha Franklin. And she sits down next to me. She was 19 and I was 22. And we started talking. I said, "I'm here with the Pistons." And she said, "I'm from Detroit." And we talked about Detroit and we became friends. She's like one of the coolest people I ever knew. And quick story, I was traded in 1966 to the Baltimore Bullets. And my buddies, my teammates took me out to a club to see the act, and the act happened to be Mrs. Aretha Franklin. And Miss Franklin said, my friend is here tonight. He's been traded to the Baltimore Bullets, but I want to sing a song for him. And the song that I'm going to sing for him is going to be You're Going to Hear From Me. And I thought about that in 1974 when I was the coach of the year. I was elected the coach of the year, and I was standing in Detroit at midcourt before 11,000 people, and I thought of Miss Aretha Franklin's song, You're Going to Hear From Me.
That's awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, Ray Scott is our guest here. We do appreciate you taking time out of your schedule, and we're definitely going to have you back on again. You are awesome, sir, and like I say, I wasn't just saying this when I said you had the best hair in the league back in the 60s. You are awesome, sir, and thank you for taking time out of your schedule, and now we'll let you go get some sleep. We appreciate it, sir.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Scott, and I look forward to seeing you in 2023, my friend.
You got it, bud. Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Ray Scott, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick little commercial break. Our next guest is waiting in the wings, and we'll be back right after this.
As you know, 89.1 Ken's FM is funded through donations by our listeners and sponsorships from area businesses. If your business would like to sponsor Ken's FM and reach thousands of young adults and college students every day, contact us at 218-585-3067 or at info@kensfm.com. Any one of us can help you get your sponsorship started. We have many packages available to fit your budget. So contact us today at 218-585-3067 or at info@kensfm.com. And thanks for listening to 89.1 Ken's FM.
Ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room and walking down the aisle with guitar in hand, she has several CDs on the market. She has several number one gold records. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the return of Carla Yobrich.
Here on Monday, Live Monday on 89.1 Ken's FM with your host, the icon, the big swing, the godmother of wrestling, Granny Hulkster, and the modern nightmare, Matthias.
Welcome back, Carla. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Just so you know, I have one of your albums here in my hand that we're going to talk about here in a little bit. Well, we're going to talk about your new stuff as well. But first, before we do that, if you want to give us a little background about yourself, then we'll talk to you and have some fun with the interview.
Sounds good. Okay, well, I'm originally from South Carolina, and I have been relocated to New Jersey. A culture shock. But I live up here with my husband, who is awesome, and our tiny dog. And I'm the weirdo in my neighborhood because I ain't from around here. That's my thing. But I've been doing this for a long time. I've got a bunch of albums out. And what else do you want to know about me?
Well, you know, I'll tell you. let's see. You have 12, I believe, 12 albums out. Let's see, the most recent one is Inside Jokes, Songs for Quarantine, and I don't think that's the one I have in my hand right now.
No, the most recent one is the one I sent you, is Twang. That's the very most recent one.
That's what I have, yes, okay, yes. I love that one, and there's one song that I have to kind of edit the title, but it's my wife's favorite song. And whenever whenever I don't do the dishes, she always asks me this question: "Hey, you want to play track 8? Would you not be a Richard?" And for those of you who know another name for Richard, that's the name of the song. So, being a musical artist and putting out all these CDs, the first one that you ever did was Something Real in 1994. When you first put out your first album, are you like going, "Wow, this is going to be like this is going to go gold, this is going to go silver, this is going to go platinum"? When you first put out your first album, what we know that you're thinking that, but
what is your main goal when you put out your first album ever?
That's an interesting question. My first album was just five songs, so it was kind of an EP, and it only was on cassette because it was 1995. And
yeah.
I was really just trying to get booked at shows that were in my nearby area. It was really just, and then people wanted to buy it, so I started making more copies of it, and so I wasn't planning to go gold at first. I was just trying to get started.
So you know, the interesting thing is, you know, I put out a comedy CD back in the day that went aluminum.
I think my cassette went plastic.
Well, hey, that's better than aluminum. You know, plastic is worth more money.
But it got
these
me
days.
A lot of shows. You know, it did exactly what I wanted it to do, which is it got me a lot of shows, and you know, it made my local fans happy, and it led me to doing the next one and the next one, and you learn with every project, you learn so much.
Carla Ulbrich is our guest. You're on 89.1 Kids FM. We got 25 minutes here with Carla. Here's what we're going to do here. We're going to talk a little bit about twang, but we're going to do a little roundtable here. We'll start out with Matthias. Now, I know that he would like you to do compose a coming to ring song for his career. Go ahead, Matthias. Beg for that. What do you got for our guest? Go ahead.
Well, first off, I want to welcome you on to the show. Yes, you are talking to the man from every woman's greatest dream and every man's worst nightmare, North Dakota's number one heel, Matthias here. Welcome on to the show. One of my main questions for you, because I like to play music back when I was younger, and I like to make music every once in a while when I could. What was one of your more difficult challenges that's been going on? Like, what is one of your more difficult songs or one of your most difficult challenges throughout your career so far?
Oh, well, you know, I think the hardest thing was starting out in South Carolina and doing the bars when I don't really do bar music, but there wasn't anywhere else to play. So, yeah, that was pretty tough because, you know, my music is very lyric focused, and people just are shouting "Freebird" and stuff like that. So I'd say it was that, probably just being but then I started traveling and playing in Georgia and South Florida, and then I found people who were more interested in, you know, less beer, more listening to music. Not that you can't
okay.
do both at once.
And then how many different instruments did you play?
Oh,
or do you
wow.
know how to play?
Well, I don't know if I still know how to play all these things because I was a marching band nerd in high school, not to be redundant or anything, but yeah, marching band nerd. And I played a different instrument every year. I played flute, clarinet, piccolo, xylophone. I don't play any of these anymore because I live in a townhouse, and that doesn't make you very popular, be playing the flute at 2 o'clock in the morning. You can imagine. But, then I was a drum major, so I played the whistle, which is not an instrument, but it is loud. And then I also played piano and guitar and ukulele and bass. Most guitar players play bass. And I think that's it. All the things I can legitimately say that I knew how to play. That's enough, though, I guess. These days, it's just piano, ukulele, and guitar.
Carla Ulbrich is our guest here on 89.1 Ken's FM. We got 22 minutes. Now, Carla, I know that Granny Hulkster, she loves her country music, and she loves her comedy music, too. So, Granny, what do you got for our guest? Go ahead.
Well, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on with us tonight. You're welcome. What is your most favorite thing about being a musician? What's the thing you enjoy about it the most?
It's a toss-up between the creativity. I just love creating something out of nothing. And the people you meet. You just meet great people, whether it's, you know, the people who come to hear you play or the other musicians who I get to collaborate with. It's the people and then the creativity that I think if you go back to what made you happy when you were five or six, it really doesn't change throughout, I think, for me anyway. It doesn't really change throughout my life. It's the creativity and just making friends.
Well, that's awesome. And what's your favorite kind of music you always enjoyed playing the most?
Oh, I thought you were going to say listening to, because it's different. Well, it's not that different. But playing, well, I just love doing humorous songs because you know instantly with a funny song whether it works or not. Serious
song, yeah.
You have to kind of wait till people come up and tell you later what they thought of it. But, yeah, I do love doing the funny songs. I started out doing serious songs and then telling funny stories in between, and it was kind of a bipolar experience for the audience. They're like, oh, just flinging from one extreme to the other. They're like, okay, I'm laughing, I'm crying. This doesn't make any sense. And then I found out, you know, all my sad songs were about relationships gone wrong. And then all my funny stories were about relationships gone wrong. So one day someone looked at me and goes, why don't you turn that funny story into a song? And that's when it all changed. So I was like, that never occurred to me to take all these ridiculous stories and turn them into songs.
That's awesome.
Well, you know, because Carla and I have such a great relationship as far as friends, she has not ever wrote a song about me, but I'm waiting. Carla, Albridge is our guest here on 89.1 Kens FM. Now, like I say, I'm going to take you through a couple CDs that you put out, and then I'm going to kind of ask you your opinion on something, and we'll do that towards the end here because I still want you to like me because we are friends. But one of the albums that I find kind of interesting that you did was Inside Joke, Songs for Quarantine, which is obviously you did during COVID. But during COVID, were you stuck at home most of the time? You didn't really get to tour much, did you?
No, I was completely stuck at home. You know, Jersey and the New York area got hit first and got hit hard with the lockdown and just COVID all over the place. It was I was stuck at home. And whenever I get in a situation where I'm like really stressed out, I just turn to the creativity, and that's my outlet. So I started live streaming every week, and I was like, oh, I need new songs. You know, because I'm going to be live streaming every week, I got to keep it fresh. And so I was just writing, and I finally learned how to record myself on my computer. And so I made that whole album at home. I wrote it, I wrote all the songs and recorded all the songs and released the album in the course of like 6 weeks.
Wow.
Of lockdown. Yeah.
And then, of course, my favorite album of yours is Twang.
Awesome. That's my newest one.
You probably don't want to hear about my favorite songs, but I'm going to give them to you anyway. Interviewing Therapist, I love that one. 20
Great.
Rats. Have you tried Not Being a Richard? Probably my all-time favorite one, Stop Trying to Bring on the Apocalypse. I'm like thinking this has got to be some kind of political statement song or something when I first read it.
It kind of is. It's not against like a political party or a politician or anything. It's more about the folks. It's a small number of folks, but they do a lot of damage. They really believe that if they just ruin the earth and make it uninhabitable, then Jesus will come back faster. And I'm like, but what about the rest of us who have to live here? what if he doesn't come back immediately?
And then track number 8, Have You Tried Not Being a Richard? Some fans are asking, which boss did you write that about?
Ha-ha, that's about my experience being on the – I hope you don't have this out there in North Dakota – but being on the Homeowners Association board.
Oh, well.
Yeah,
we have
volunteered.
Something similar to that, but.
Oh, it's those. You might hear stories about these, I'd never heard of a homeowners association until I moved to New Jersey. And I'm like, what is this? We recreated a police state because things were too fun and free here? What, you know, it's where the developer sets it up. Because, you know, when you got townhouses and condos, like, somebody has to take care of the roofs and the siding and stuff. So they, you know, you don't, like, I only take care of my little part of the siding. It's one building, and so you have to have, like, an overseeing people collecting money to take care of the big projects like that. But then they start getting real nitpicky and, like, writing you nasty letters, like, there's weeds in your shrub bed, and we're going to fine you if you don't take... Oh, You can't paint your house any other color but this specific shade of brown, and oh, your yard is like a quarter of an inch too long, and you can't park here, and oh, we don't like the curtains in your it's ridiculous. So
it sounds that way.
Yeah, we had problems, and I thought I'm going to get on the board because the people on the board here were really nasty, and I wanted to change the culture. And I thought, you know, I want to make a difference. And, oh, I made a difference. I was like, now I need a therapist.
Carla Ulbrich is our guest here. We got 15 minutes here left with Carla. Now, another a couple albums that I've actually trying to find. And now, don't take this the wrong way, Carla, but I have four of your albums right now. I'm currently bidding on eBay right now. And the ones I'm trying to get are Total Average Woman, Carla Ulbrich, her fabulous debut, Sick Humor. That's actually on. Did you know there's actually an autographed copy of one of your CDs on eBay right now?
Oh, I wonder who it's autographed to. Probably not you.
No, I have mine in my man cave. And then the other one I'm trying to do is Professional Smart Aleck, which, of course, is more like me. Of those albums, which one do you think that I should when I get them, what song would you want me to gravitate towards for each one of those albums?
Okay, so for Totally Average Woman, I'm going to guess that you're going to like either the title track, Totally Average Woman, which is a blues spoof. It sort of makes fun of all the blues cliches. Or Joe's Ex-Girlfriend, which is the hook of that is, thank you, Joe's Ex-Girlfriends, my husband. You make me look sane.
I like
in
that.
In comparison. Yeah, they were so crazy that I'm like, oh, well, that makes me look just like a normal person. And that takes some doing. So on that album, I would say those two will probably stand out to you.
All right. And I noticed you got one song on your album, Her Fabulous Debut, named after Matthias. Were you aware of that, Matthias?
No.
It's called Boy Wonder.
Oh. Huh?
I'm sorry.
Again, we're going to have a little talk after the show.
Well, hey, look.
I
want to
take time travel.
Yeah,
that would be more DeLorean Diggs, one of my most and my biggest enemies. Yeah, no, that is. I'd say that it learns more towards him.
And you know the, you know, like I said, you said your most recent one is Twang. What else you got coming out? Do you have another album coming out soon, or that you're working on that you can kind
I
of break the ice?
I have one I'm working on. Yeah, I do. I'm always writing and. I have plenty of songs for a new album, but I have to get back in the studio, and I'm going to use – I don't want to do it at home. But I do have a single coming out pretty soon about football. I might put it out, like, next week.
Now, what is that called?
It's called Sit Here and Scream, and it's about how the football teams are always – changing cities, changing the names of their teams, trading away their players, and it's like, well, I guess I'm just going to sit here and scream because I don't even know who's on the field anymore.
And, you know, unfortunately, we can't mention the title of the documentary, but you did a song called If I Had the Copyright for a documentary by Steve Anderson. Of course, we can't give the title because, you know, it's
the title of the documentary, yes.
Right, it's a PG show, but how did you get hooked up with that?
That was so strange. A friend of mine who sort of is in the music business and the movie business called me and said, he was reading, I think, Variety magazine, and he said, they're making a movie about the F word, and you need to get your song in it. And I said, okay, how do I do that? And he's like, well, the director's name is this. And so I just, you know, got on the Google machine and found a fax number, and I sent him a fax, and he got back to me. So it was a little bit of luck and a little bit of Google foo.
Now, I don't know if you still do this. Carla Ulrich is our guest here. We're on 89.1 Kins FM. We got about 10 minutes left here with Carla. But now, do you still give lessons for teaching instruments? You still do that, or is that something that's in the past?
I still have a handful of students that I teach virtually. You know, over the computer or the phone, you know, like a FaceTime or a Skype or whatever. But I do have a handful of the students that I'm still very attached to who have, you know, we have several years of working together. And some of them I only meet once a month. And, you know, we're pretty flexible about each other's schedules because when you go off and do shows, then, you know, you can't split your brain and go, okay, I know I've got a sound check, but I got to do a piano lesson right now. So, I still have a handful of students, and I really do enjoy teaching. I've been doing it off and on for a pretty long time, and I'm good at it, and I feel like I'm contributing something, like making people's lives better. I don't want everything to just be about myself. So,
you know,
one thing I was kind of
curious about, you won an award in 2006 for Novelty Song of the Year. And the song is called What If Your Butt Was Gone? Of course, you wouldn't be able to sit down. But I'm kind of curious, when you get an award like that, is there like a, do they like call you like a month in advance saying you won this award or you're being nominated for this award, we're having the banquet or the session on this day? I'm kind of curious, could you take us through that on how you find out that you're nominated or if you won, or take us through that?
Well, I believe with that, I think that was the Just Plain Folks Award, which was a very large scale, some ridiculous number, like 70,000 entries, but they have about 20 categories. And they just email everybody and for that particular thing. Other things I've gotten phone calls, but this one was for just email because they had, like I said, 20 categories, and then they have their winners and their runners-up and everything. So I don't know how many phone calls that would be. So they just do it with an email blast to let you know that you placed. And then they had a big gala, but I wasn't able to attend for some reason in 2006. I don't remember what happened. But I think I was getting ready to get married. Yeah. So, couldn't do it. But...
You know, a couple other songs that you've done that I really like, because we're all sports nuts here, was Take Me Out to the Overpriced Ball Game.
Who's your team?
The Minnesota Twins, actually. And
okay.
I believe,
that's not so far.
Matthias, I believe that's your team too, right?
For baseball, yeah.
For baseball. And Granny is the Kansas City Royals.
Okay. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of baseball in it. In the Midwest, there's some, but yeah, there's not as many teams to pick from.
So you don't have a favorite football team then?
Me?
Yeah.
New York Mets.
The Mets. Okay. All right. Well, yeah. The Mets never beat the Twins. It's always the Yankees. So I kind of like the Mets too, especially the Miracle Mets. We have Carla Ulrich is our guest here. We're on 89.1 Kins FM. We got about 7 minutes here with Carla. So you mentioned that, Twang is your current album, and you got one that you're working on now. what is your hope for release on your newest one?
Time-wise?
Yeah.
Like in the timeline? I'm going to say, I have no idea. I hopefully in the spring.
All right.
That's my hope.
And when you decide that you're going to go do an album, and I've never asked an artist this before because I'm kind of curious. When you decide that you want to do another album, or when you plan out an album, do you sit down and say, okay, I need to have this many songs on it, or is it that the label that you're working for is saying, hey, we need you to have an album out by this time? Take us through that process.
Well, I'm indie, so I it's all up to me. I can do it any way I want to, which is good and bad when you're ADD. It's like, I just thought of another song I want to put on there. Oh, I want to take this. No, I want to take that off. No, I want to put that on. Oh, I want to do a country. No, I want to do a rock. So because I don't have anybody constraining me, it's like I have to get somebody to rein me in, usually my producer. I try to wait until I have a critical mass of more songs than I need so I can throw something out if I don't like it. So, you know, like if I could ideally have about 15 or 16 songs, and then if some of them just, like, don't go together, then I can just say I'm not putting that on this project. I'll put it on the next one. Or
then you can start another album, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a never-ending thing. There's always something in the can that I didn't use that I'm holding out for another project. Yeah. There's no more singles these days.
So now, do you just, like, plan out, like, you need to do, like, at least 10 songs, or is there, like, a certain amount you want to do for each album now?
Yeah, I think 10 is usually, like, the standard as far as, like, okay, 10 equals an album. And, you know, you can do 12 or, you know, even 13 or 14, but nobody wants to do anything in the number of 13 because that's unlucky. So, you know, 10 or 12 equals an album. You'll notice on Twang, I only did 8 because I was just going to do an EP of, like, 5 songs, and then I was like, oh, but I want to put this on, and, oh, these musicians are so good, let me do this one too. So it went a little – it was supposed to be an EP, and it sort of expanded up. Apparently an EP is, like, 5 to 7 songs, and I was like, what the heck? Just this one more. I just have to put it. Just this one more. So,
you know, and you know, the cool thing is, Carla, and I'm sure you know this, but there is one album that you always have in your back pocket that I'm waiting for you to release. When are we going to see a greatest hits album?
It's funny you ask that. I have a radio promoter who I just met who's like, oh, I would have loved to have promoted Twang, and I still can, to the Americana stations, because it went out more to the folk stations. He has more like Americana country, and, you know, this is definitely a country album. But he was like, if I do work with this album, first of all, you have to remove the song Have You Tried Not Being a Richard, which is a shame, but I understand. You can't really play it on
the
radio.
I do love the song, though.
I do, too. That's so much fun recording it. And then he wanted me to include 3 or 4 of my greatest hits. So it would kind of make it, in a way, a greatest hits album, kind of. But with digital, you know, you can do anything with digital.
Well, what would you say let's say that your greatest hits album, let's say it featured, say, 12 songs, 10 of your top hits and 2 new ones. What would be the top 5 songs that you'd put on your greatest hits album?
Oh, definitely I would put What If Your Girlfriend Was Gone. That's my little psycho love triangle song. Totally Average Woman. And I might put What If Your Butt Was Gone. What If Your Butt Was Gone is a parody of What If Your Girlfriend Was Gone. It's the same tune. So I wrote a parody of one of my own songs, which...
Are you the only artist to ever do a parody of their own song?
That's a good question. I don't know. It seems a little strange, but it was right there. It was just right there. I had to do it. And what else? That's three. I have a song that my cousin wrote that I sing all the time that everybody thinks that I wrote, but I did not. It's called Toasted Chicken Sandwich. But I couldn't put that on a greatest hits of my own because I didn't write it. I really like Is It Hot Enough For You?
Oh, I do love that too. Dude, that's track number one on Twang.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that one came out really well with the band. The band is just so hot. I gave everybody a solo. I was like, just keep playing, keep playing. You guys sound amazing. Keep playing.
We got about the 60 seconds here with Carly here. So if our fans want to check you out, you got a Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, a TikTok. What do you got?
I got just about all of that stuff, and the hub is carlyu.com, carlau.com, and then there's links to all those things from there.
Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, Carla, thank you for being on again with us, and we are going to have you on again. The next time you'll be on, you'll be joining the Five Timers Club, so we're definitely going to have you get that title as well. So I'll be in contact with you. You can contact me. We'll get you on when you bring out your next album, and we'll have a blast again.
Great. Now, you guys send me some dirt about yourselves, and maybe Granny will send me some dirt about both of you, and I'll write you both songs.
Sounds good. Hey, Matthias, you know on that?
Oh, you bet.
All right. You can do a song about Candy being too old, the icon being too egotistical, and...
me, just because I'm that good.
Right, exactly. Well, I'll tell you what, Carlos, thank you for joining us. You are awesome. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Carla Ulrich is our guest there. We got about 15 seconds here before our theme song prints. Grant, you'll be with us again next week?
As far as I know.
And Matthias, you'll be here again next week?
As always.
And then you can tell us all about your matches. Until then, everybody, we'll see you next week, same time, 9 p.m. Central Standard Time to 11 p.m. Central Standard Time on 89.1 Ken's FM, kensfm.com. And always, always be nice to each other, love each other. Join us next week, and we will see you all then.
On the same, I see clearly.
As a non-commercial radio station, Ken's FM survives in large part by the generosity of listeners like you, who value public radio and have become a member. Your donation continues to allow us to support local artists and musicians and play the music you want to hear, not what advertisers think we should play. It enables us to broadcast feature story news so you can hear the news, not opinions. Public radio doesn't have an agenda. We're not in the business of pushing our point of view. Our mission is simple. Reflect your interests, not the interests of some corporation. If you believe that having an independent, non-commercial, public radio station in your community is a good idea, become a member now. Find out how by visiting our website at www.kensfm.com. And remember, independence has a cost, and it's as little as $10 a month.
Thanks for listening to 89.1 Ken's FM. We are-